Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio. Where you're listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Joan Brock lost her sight while she was working at a blind school at the age of 32. At the age of 37, Joan lost her husband to cancer, and she was left to raise her daughter as a single parent. These challenges didn't stop Joan from pursuing two dreams, speaking and writing. Joan's two books that talk about life struggles and how she's overcome them are titled Come to Your Senses and More Than Meets the Eye. Joan's story, More Than Meets the Eye, has been portrayed into a 2003 Lifetime television movie. In her presentations to attendees, Joan's topics explore the idea of success that must be shared by all members of effective and enduring organizations. Joan joins us to talk about how she faced struggles and challenges and has become a successful writer and speaker. Welcome to the show, Joan.
Oh, thank you, Brian. I appreciate you having me.
So how did you lose your vision?
Well, at the age of 32, I'd been working at the school for blind children in Iowa. I had been there approximately 5 years, as you mentioned. And I began having a few problems with first color perception, not really knowing what the problem was. Eventually was directed to go and see the neuro-ophthalmology department down at the University of Iowa. And they did not know either what was going on when they looked in the back of my eye. But to make a long story short, in 3 weeks' time, I lost my sight to an autoimmune deficiency, which attacked the veins and cells going to my retina, and it destroyed the cones and rods as well, which is basically, you know, where the color perception issue became the first issue. And it caused the condition of macular degeneration. So I have some light perception, but I have no color or depth, and my central vision is pretty much non-existent. So it's a very odd set of circumstances. I was young and had perfect vision. There was no indication I was going to have a vision problem. And working at a school for blind children, obviously, it was extraordinary. So that's how I lost my sight. The answers of why are not completely clear, but I can guess that many of your listeners have also been told, well, we've never seen this before, and it's an odd situation to be in, quite frankly.
Before you lost your sight, you worked at the Iowa Braille and Sight Saving School. What was this school, and what did you do there, and how did you speak out to work there?
First, I had a variety of jobs. My husband that I married had been there 2 years. I was not familiar with the school. It is in Vinton, Iowa, or was, I have to say, which is near Cedar Rapids and Waterloo, in that part of the state of Iowa. And my first job, it was a residential setting, so the students lived on campus. And my first job was as a house parent, where I had 10 little boys, ages 7 to 11, in the first job that I had, and I began learning a lot very quickly. Those 10 little boys began teaching me, basically, how to teach them. And it was extraordinary, and I just really became very intrigued with teaching blind children. So the fact that I wanted to be as helpful as possible, I started learning Braille and became a certified Braillist. Now, understand this is all before my vision loss. I then also had a position as a classroom aide person, and then I stepped eventually into a position called the dormitory liaison, and I programmed and planned different activities for the students in the community. Anything that had to do with the community, I was the go-to person on that campus. So whether it was a student that was in Pee Wee Wrestling or wanted to go to church, or if there was a meeting being held and they needed a speaker on behalf of the school, Kiwanis Clubs, Ladies Church Groups, Lions Clubs, all those kinds of things, I was the person that would go and represent the school and speak on their behalf. So I had a variety of positions, and when I started having vision problems, I was in that position of representing the school and working with the community.
What sort of formal education did you get to do public speaking and writing? And how did you speak out about your abilities to do both activities?
My formal education was a degree from, you know, college in recreation therapy. So my working at the School for the Blind really hadn't, I was not trained for it. It was on the job training, basically. I was a recreation therapist, so I did a lot of scheduling and things like that with different special clients that, for instance, I worked at a mental hospital and at a penitentiary before I started working at a school for blind children. And so I really didn't have a formal preparation. Obviously, I also didn't have a formal preparation for writing or for speaking. It all just kind of fell into place. And both fortunately and unfortunately, with the reasons being, the public speaking really came because people were asking how I got through all of these different life experiences. From that, I began writing. Computers were just becoming popular at this time. And so I took a class for Talking Computer for the Blind, and I began keeping a journal. And that journal is what became, without me really pursuing it, became my first book, More Than Meets the Eye.
More Than Meets the Eye. What's the book about, and how did you speak out to publish it?
More Than Meets the Eye is my life story up until about 20 years ago, actually. It's an autobiography, actually, and I had a co-author, Mr. Derek Gill, who unfortunately is deceased at this time, but I was introduced to him by Tom Sullivan and his life story, If You Could See What I Hear. Tom and I were introduced many years ago, and he was very intrigued with my story and introduced me to his co-author, Derek Gill. So Derek then sat down and began writing my book with me. And when the book was published in 1994 by HarperCollins, it was turned into 10 languages. It was in the Reader's Digest condensed books, and Hollywood began looking at it for a film. That did not end up happening for quite a few years. There were a variety of reasons that the script didn't get written, and just because someone looks at a story and thinks this would make a good movie, it doesn't mean it's going to happen immediately. And it did not get made until 2003, and Lifetime Television was the network that aired it at that time. Since then, that movie has been taken internationally. Hallmark takes, once it's kind of done in the United States, they take it, and they, I can't even tell you the number of countries it's been shown, because I will have sometimes a notice, an email, somebody will probably Google my name. It's all I'm figuring out. And maybe somebody from Argentina or South Africa or Australia or, Ireland, they'll send me an email saying how much they enjoyed the movie and what it meant to them. So it has been unbelievable and nothing I really planned for.
Your book's been translated into many languages. What are these languages?
Oh, boy. It was 10 languages. So I know it was Spanish, Chinese for Taiwan. I know it was French. I believe there was a Dutch version or German. Oh, dear, you've got me on the spot here. I'm not really remembering all the different languages, but I know it was 10 languages, and that was just, I don't know. It just was so... I was so flattered, and to think that it might be of help, that the story might give people hope and help in the midst of very serious and difficult changes.
I saw one testimonial about one of your books on your website. TV, film, and stage star Betty White, she says, quote, "After being captured by the early chapters of Joan Brock's story, I locked my door, pulled out the telephone jack, and read it from cover to cover. It is an absolutely wonderful book," end quote. How did it feel to have this sort of positive review?
Well, can you imagine? I have been very fortunate. I truly have. And Tom Sullivan and Betty White are like family. And I was fortunate enough to meet Betty on a couple of occasions because of my friendship with Tom. And she truly, if there's someone that you wish they would be like you want them to be, she truly is that person. She's as kind and sweet and funny as what you see on the screen. And it's just a real thrill to know that I've gotten to be in her, you know, with her on a couple of occasions. I couldn't say that we're friends because she would have more than a billion friends if she was friends with everybody she met. But it was always a great experience. And for her to make that quote, it was just a real fortunate thing and lots of fun, lots of fun.
Okay. So let's talk about your other book, Come to Your Senses. How did you advocate your ability, to convince the publisher of that book to support the topic for you to write it?
Well, actually, the world of publishing has changed dramatically. And in years gone by, my co-author, Derek Gill, had an association with HarperCollins, the large publishing company in New York City. Today, those publishing companies are still around, but the way in which you get into a big publishing house is very much more complicated. Thus, this book, which I started working really 2001, I started writing some of the chapters of Come to Your Senses, so I've just been chipping away at it on my own for all these years. And so in 2012, I did put it together, but I self-published with a publishing company where I in the hometown that I live, and they have been very supportive. But it is a self-publishing type of publishing company, and the marketing and everything is up to you as an individual. The hope always now, and many, many, many books are self-published first now, and then maybe the larger companies will look at them, unless they have a deal with a writer or an author that they know that they want to publish automatically. But when you're unknown, basically, and I am not a known name, if you will, it's very difficult to get an interest. I've had people trying to get my book in the front door of the big publishing house, but I decided eventually to self-publish, and it's really been a wonderful experience. And you also maintain a lot of control, of your own control. It is on ebook. It is, you know, of course, you can order on Amazon, but you can order it on my website, both of my books. But More Than Meets the Eye, the first book, is on Talking Book for the Blind. All they need to do is ask for either the title or my name. Come to Your Senses has not been transcribed or recorded for Talking Book for the Blind yet, and I keep lobbying to see if maybe somebody will consider doing it, but haven't gotten that done yet.
Let's talk about public speaking. How did you advocate your abilities to become a public speaker?
You know, I have been speaking now for, well, more than 20 years, maybe 25 years almost. It kind of happened with a natural instinct. My father was a pastor, and he grew up speaking before people. And so I was used to seeing that standing before people and speaking was not an odd thing. Many people are frightened of speaking. It was kind of a natural thing for me not to have a fear of that. I am only guessing now. In years gone by, I've tried to look back and figure this out. But when I lost my sight, and then I lost a husband to cancer, I had many people asking how I got through these things. And I had one of my childhood teachers ask me if I wouldn't mind coming and speaking to her ladies' church group. And really, that was one of the first moments of my speaking to a group, because I didn't even know what I would say. From that, then there's almost always somebody in the audience that knows somebody that wants you to speak at their group. And that's kind of how it evolved, going then to the Lions Clubs or the Rotary Clubs or the you know, different groups. And it just started snowballing to where I was speaking every week and started developing what needed to be said and what should be left out. That was just not just too much information. Sometimes they'd say, we only want you to speak for 15 minutes. Some people would say, I want you to speak for an hour. So I had to figure out how to adapt the time frames and how to make it poignant and how to make it funny, because I think all of us will agree, when you're blind, funny things just naturally happen. And sharing some of those moments also gave my audience members the opportunity to take that breath and just relax and not feel uncomfortable with my situation, my story, or any of those kinds of things. And hopefully they can walk away with their heads a little bit higher, saying, if she can do that, I can do better at whatever part of life they might want to try and improve. And that's my goal, is to give people food for thought, also to hopefully educate them in the world of, at least my world of being visually impaired and or blind. We don't all function the same, and I think the average person in the public thinks all people act and walk and talk and think in every step the same way, and we don't. We all have our own way of, this works for me and that works for you, Brian. Sometimes, you know, you and I do things differently, I'm sure.
Yep.
And I think it's important for the general public to understand that. And so I don't pretend to be the expert of being a blind person. I am just one of many blind people and leading a positive, productive life, which is also very important for people to know, because I think it's important for them to see that blind people are just people that are looking at life a little bit differently. And that I learned from those 10 little boys that began teaching me how to teach them.
Yeah, and you've spoken to many audiences, including you spoke to an audience in Jackson, California, correct?
Actually, I think I was actually in Sutter Creek, right next to Jackson. It was a community outreach group, and it included, I think, three small communities, Jackson and Sutter Creek, and I'm not sure of the name of the other town. I apologize. But yes, I was just there about a week and a half ago.
What was the event?
I believe the church there where I was speaking, it was just the venue. We're trying to start community outreach to involve the community so that whether they you can learn about this or that. And I was the first speaker they had. I think they're going to next month have a speaker from the local hospital and giving them some information about. So they're going to do a variety of things. And I think it's just a wonderful event and just involving community. And it was free to the public. And it was just lovely. So the audience was wonderful. The response. They laughed and they listened and they had wonderful questions. And really, that's the fun part for me at the end, is when there's time for question and answers, because I get to know my audience a little bit more, and it's lots of fun. Cool.
Let's talk about your personal life. How do you balance your family life with your public speaking life and your writing life?
How do I balance that? Well, you know what? I've been very fortunate, again, because I have a husband now. I'm remarried to a wonderful man that I had known in high school. And his world and my world are very different. He is a lepidopterist, and that is someone who studies butterflies. And as we speak, as we record this, he just left yesterday for a trip to Peru, where he's leading a butterfly tour down in the jungles of Peru.
Ooh.
And so our lives kind of go in different directions. And I will be leaving this Wednesday on a trip, and I'm heading to North Carolina. But I have a shuttle service picking me up to take me to the airport, and I travel alone. I've got it down. I've figured out how to do it. And so I try to do things as independently, as you can see, as possible, but I do need his help, and he helps me in my business as shipping books or whatever the case may be. He's kind of my gopher. We have very different lives, but somehow it blends together. The writing is, I don't know, just such a It is cathartic and therapeutic for me, and I continue to write things that maybe never will be published, but it just is very helpful for me, and I do encourage my audiences to, when you've got something, write it down. And I don't care if somebody uses a recording device, a tablet, a computer, sighted people. I don't care if you use a spiral notebook and write it down with an ink pen. I don't care. It's, if you write it down, I think it becomes clear of what you're really feeling or thinking about or what really happened. And it's just been very good for me. My personal life, I don't think about being blind. I'm guessing the larger percentage of your audience, listening audience, if they're blind or visually impaired, they don't sit there and think about it every day. I don't. It's a part of my life now. I've been blind for 30 years, and it's just, it is what it is. You know, you kind of learn how to lead your life, and not that I don't need help. And when I am home alone, there are things I wish I had somebody here to help me with, but most of the time it can wait. So balancing those things, I don't think our situation, my situation, is much different from any of my sighted friends, quite honestly. But maybe that's how I just look at it.
Yes, absolutely. And what advice do you have, briefly, for our listeners who want to get into public speaking?
I think what you have to first do is know your topic. If I were to say to you, Brian, okay, you want to speak to the group ABC, but give me one sentence about what your topic is about and what your audience is going to learn from you. You have to know what you're talking about and why you're speaking to them, or why a group wants to hear you speak. You have to know what your focus is. And that is different with each speaker. Everybody has a different message. First, you have to get that very clear and make it very precise and concise. Then, once you know what you're speaking about and you have practiced it in the shower, I don't care where you do it, stand somewhere and do your 15-minute speech over and over. Then you have to be able to tell a group, you know, I'm a speaker. I'd like to be considered to speak at your Rotary Club, and here's my message. And then you do the free ones, and that's starting with the free ones are the ones that you have to start with. I don't know how many speeches I've done as particular early in my career that were free. It's just part of the game. So it's not an easy profession to make a living at. Let me just be honest with you.
So how can our listeners buy your books, see you in person, book you as a guest, and learn more about you really quickly?
My website, www.joanbrock.com, JoanBrock. You can order my books there. You can read more about my messages, my target topics. You can get my contact information there. If you know of a group that's looking for a speaker, I always appreciate being considered. But that's going to be the easiest way to be in touch with me and learn more about my story.
Joan, we hope that you continue writing, speaking, and inspiring us to go for our dreams. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian. It's been my honor.
Before we go, I want to give a very special thanks to my friend Waylon Temple out of Ione, California, for providing me with the idea for today's show. And I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Share the joy of that Southern spirit. Everybody share the joy. Hey everybody, this is Denny Huff.
And this is Chip Haley, and we'd like to invite you to listen to Encouragement for the Journey.
Every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on ACB Radio Interactive.
Hear the good time, gospel.